Hello, it's Thursday, July 13th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio. It's a beautiful day here in Happy Valley, Pennsylvania. We want to start off by thanking Mr. Clay Douglas for being on our show yesterday. We got some real good feedback from people out there. He is the free American. He calls them like they are. Let the chips fall where they may.
It's always a wild time when he's around,
It certainly is. Also, we put on America's Mysterious Beginnings, The New Atlantis. We just added that to the Wing TV homepage. Some people have been inquiring about that. And tomorrow, we're going to have the co-producer of this DVD, Mr. David Bay, on our show. We had Christian Pinto on last Wednesday. Really generated a lot of interest. A great DVD. And we also have to note that the Middle East is in the most massive turmoil it's been in for years. Israel bombed the Beirut airport last night, and today they have an air, land, and sea blockade around the whole country of Lebanon. They have warplanes going in. They bombed the Lebanese or the Beirut airport, the TV stations, civilians. They're calling it now a war in the Middle East. Blame is also being placed on Iran and Syria, very conveniently. And we have to ask, what is next? In the Middle East, we know there's weapons of mass destruction over there, 400 warheads in Israel.
And it's important to note, too, this is what you get when you have psychopaths running the world.
Exactly. So that's something definitely that everyone should keep an eye on. And when we did a Wing TV poll a couple weeks ago, this was one of the biggest things that people were concerned about, was some kind of nuclear attack or invasion in the Middle East, so keep an eye on that. Now, our guest today is Mr. Terrence Raymond. And the way we found him was, a few weeks ago, I went down to my P.O. box and noticed that there was a package in there. When I opened it, it was a five-disc DVD set called Evidence of Revision. Well, a couple of days later, we started watching this DVD, these DVDs, and were absolutely floored by it. Well, I saw the envelope laying around one day and was ready to throw it away when I saw a little slip of paper in it that had nothing but an email address. Well, I contacted this individual to thank him for the DVD, and as we started talking, I says, you ought to come on the show and talk about this DVD. So there's five discs in it. It's amazing. And we'd like to welcome Mr. Terrence Raymond to Wing TV. How you doing, Terrence?
Hi, Terrence.
Real good. It's really nice down here in San Diego today.
Well, yeah, I used to live in L.A., so the weather in San Diego is even more beautiful than L.A., so...
Yeah, we're spoiled here.
You really are. You definitely are.
Well, I'm Terrence, sorry for your winters up there.
Well, we got...
So are we.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, believe me. Yeah, every 3 months every year, December, January, and February, I kick myself and I say, what am I doing back here?
Well, you're making us happier here in San Diego that you don't move down here, because
small
it's not
comfort.
Enough.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Terrence, let us know how you came about compiling this DVD set called Evidence of Revision, which focuses primarily on the JFK assassination, but in the later discs, it also delves into Bobby Kennedy's assassination and then into Jonestown, MK Ultra, and on and on and on. So give everybody a little overview of what you've done here.
Well, I was alive during the JFK assassination, and I was a teenager when Bobby Kennedy was killed in Ventura County, and I was listening to the live radio reports in the middle of the night, I was in my bed with a little transistor radio and a little thing tucked in my ear so I could hear the live radio. And because he was shot, you know, like in the early AM.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the live reports of people reporting, encountering people who were claiming responsibility for the killing. They were dancing and laughing outside the hotel,
uh-huh.
The Ambassador Hotel. And I was just, you know, amazed that those reports disappeared from the media later. And that really got me concerned and interested in finding out what was behind some of these political events. And over the years, I learned more and more, as some of us have. You know, you delve into it, the more shocked you'll become.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's go back to the John Kennedy assassination, and I've done a lot of research on this subject, but you have footage here that I've never even remotely seen before. Let me ask you this question. It seems like when John Kennedy traveled to Dallas in November of 1963, there were a lot of people, excuse the pun, gunning for him. Do you think John Kennedy knew that day how much his life was actually in danger?
Well, that's always been one of the big questions. Clearly, he was getting warnings, but I know of at least two or three occasions where he told the people, like Evelyn Lincoln, his personal secretary, that, you know, I can't. You got to remember, Abraham Lincoln avoided a plot to kill him at first by sneaking into Washington on a train when he had had reports that his life was in danger, and he got so much bad press, and the people called him a wuss and a coward. So he never could do that again. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder if Kennedy was also aware of that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That if he, you know, he had already avoided two potential assassinations, one in Miami and one in Chicago. They mm-hmm. had canceled one of those trips just before his assassination.
Uh-huh.
And they had changed the route, I believe, and sped up the whole cavalcade to avoid his being shot in another. So it's amazing, really, in a lot of ways. It's really amazing that he actually did that. Because, you know, in the DVD set, there's a little clip that's never been released publicly by CBS of America's first Black Supreme Court Justice, Thurgood Marshall, where he talks about how Kennedy showed amazing courage just by going
and going
on that parade.
It's my understanding that Kennedy tended to ignore warnings to him about his personal safety and going out into crowds. So maybe
he wanted the personal touch. He wanted to connect with people, which says a lot for him. And his brother did, too.
Yeah. Your DVDs really show footage of Lyndon Johnson that really gives a person the impression that Lyndon Johnson was, like, one of the, maybe the main motivating force behind the assassination. Explain the role of Lyndon Johnson.
Well, you got to realize that the whole thing couldn't really have happened without his cooperation.
That's the way it looks.
Whether he was actually behind the whole thing, as his mistress seems to think, I forgot her name, Madeline Brown. Who knows? You know, there's so many people that were involved and so many different power blocks that are involved that you have to take them all into account.
Mm-hmm.
It could not have happened, really, without the elites within the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service, the major media cooperating.
Yeah.
And the Dallas police, you know. It just couldn't have happened. The people that think that it was the mafia and that everybody had just covered up for them, I just can't buy that because it just doesn't cover all the facts.
Well, you're right.
LBJ hated them. You know, he had a real personal grind against them.
That's pretty obvious from your footage.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you point out is that Lyndon Johnson won his first political office through voter fraud. He took the vice presidency through blackmail, and he took the presidency through a coup de grace. This guy was as dirty as they come, wasn't he?
Well, you know, I think so, but again, he's a complex personality, and he clearly suffered terribly in guilt complex for what he did, and broke down, you know, psychologically at the end. He couldn't even go on as president, and apparently he did seek the psychological help because you gotta put yourself in his position, no matter how much he wanted that power, and I'm sure he's a human being. He's got good in him too. He wanted to do good, and he did by pushing through Kennedy's congressional agenda and getting a lot of good social legislation through, which of course now is being removed slowly but surely by the conservative forces in this country.
The torment that you describe makes me think he violated his own conscience with his role in.
Oh, he had to be in a lot of conflict.
He was
a classic. He was a huge man. In fact, I worked for a man who dealt with him personally. I was privileged to serve in some elite duty in the military in the early 1970s when I was a part of something at the Naval Photographic Center called the White House National Archives shoot crew, or MOPIC crew, where we recorded everything that President Ford said in public. And I worked. The man I worked for was a very high GS who was a sound man that taped a microphone once to Lyndon Johnson's chest and worked with JFK. And the stories he told was how, you know, about what an imposing presence Lyndon Johnson was. He tended to bully people. That was one of the ways he got so much done, though, because he was a very big, crude, primitive, violent force.
He was.
Well, that's so he did a lot of good, but he did, you know, there it is, all that evil that he did that balances it out.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, you also touch upon quite extensively J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
in this DVD set, and not only his relationship to people like Clint Murchison, but also to Meyer Lansky, who says Hoover doesn't touch any of us because of the direct ties between Carlos Mosella, Santos Traficant. Hoover had a big gambling problem, and also it seems like they had a few pictures of him too, didn't they?
Yeah, those are pretty famous. A lot of people did apparently see them, and those have been touched on in a number of documentaries, such as Frontline, and I think American Masters even talked about it one time.
Uh-huh.
There have been a number of documentaries over the years of Hoover's secrets, and his homosexual life was the thing that hung over his head, interestingly, even as he blackmailed Kennedy over his sex life.
Right, right.
You know, he was a bit of a hypocrite there, and Meyer Lansky had some photographs, which I have a suspicion I know where they were taken even, that they held over Hoover's head, so Hoover kept the FBI from touching the mafia. And then when the Kennedys came in, RFK, as Attorney General, went after the mafia big time, and you know they had to put pressure on Hoover to stop him, and Hoover couldn't stop him. So there were the Kennedys threatening Hoover's very status and career.
Well, it was like
he had a motive to get rid of him.
Yeah, well, it was a double-edged sword that the very same thing that derived or gave Hoover his power was also that which was the sword of Damocles held over his head.
Sure.
The Hoover files on everybody, including the Kennedys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I once saw something about what happened to those files. I believe that they were disposed of by his personal secretary after he passed on, or at least after he went out of office, but wouldn't that be a treasure trove to take?
Oh my God. Just 1 hour in there would be amazing. Well, tell us about this guy, Clint Murchison, who was not only one of the wealthiest men in Texas. Some people say he controlled Texas back in the 60s. He had relationships with a guy named D.H. Byrd, who was not only an underworld boss, but he owned the school book depository, which conveniently they said that's where Lee Harvey Oswald was. So tell us the dynamics of these Texas oil men, the Texas high rollers, and how they controlled the police that day, which really allowed this whole assassination to take place.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Well, you know, I think again in watching all the footage that I collected over the years on the Dallas police, that it really came down to Captain Fritz, the top man there who was really running things, and he was contacted by LBJ to control things as well. I think people like Jesse Curry, police chief, was fairly well a dupe and was used and manipulated because he seems like he was a fairly honest fellow, and along with most of the other police officers. Although I do have footage in that police in those halls when they were moving Oswald, one that appears where at least one of the police detectives is trying to avoid being photographed. And so there had to be some others there that were involved, and they had to be pressured by people like H.L. Hunt, who was arguably one of, if not the richest man on the planet at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You also,
that's real money, and that's real power.
Yeah.
As far as Clint Richardson is concerned, I'm sorry, I have never researched him personally, so I don't know that much about him more than what's in the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into the Bobby Kennedy assassination, we were watching the footage, and we're watching this law enforcement guy, Hernandez, I believe his name
Sergeant
was.
Sergeant Hernandez.
Pretty much just trying to force a retraction of eyewitness testimony from this lady Serrano, and he was so persistent that she ends up just caving in psychologically.
I mean, it was browbeating her.
It was
woman
so
named,
obvious.
Yeah,
standing.
Well,
how they could get away with that.
In police stations across this country at times, they get false confessions out of people that way. They just, they frighten you and browbeat you and threaten you and then offer you safety if you just confess, and that was the same sort of technique they were using on that young lady.
Yeah.
Was an eyewitness to the reports of the woman in the polka dot dress and her friend who were claiming to have been part of the forces that killed Robert Kennedy. And, they say that there is no footage in existence of the actual assassination, but if you pay attention to the eyewitness reports and the other news reports, they all talk about the brilliant camera lights at the time of the assassination that were blinding everybody. Even the guy, the guard behind him, Thane Eugene Caesar, who is one of the suspects in the actual killing, talked about not being able to see what was in front of RFK, and he didn't even see Sirhan because Sirhan was in front. God.
It's really amazing that they even videoed that Serrano interrogation.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, these things happen. Like I had mentioned to Victor earlier in a different phone conversation, after OK City, Oklahoma City bombing, I saw a McNeil Air NewsHour where the FBI held a press conference and claimed that there were arrests, I believe they said seven arrests, as many as seven arrests imminent, and that the main guy that, what's his name?
Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, McVeigh, the main guy was a simple-minded person who was used by them in a court, and they were, in a sense, saying he was a patsy.
Well, those
and
early...
That report never got repeated. The next day, there wasn't a word in the press. Everything changed. And yet, that was on network news.
Yeah, that's
but
oftentimes...
nobody remembers it now.
Yeah, that's oftentimes the best and only time to get the real stories,
right
when it first breaks, because then it gets scrubbed. But let's go back to Bobby Kennedy and his role as the Attorney General. Now, we know that the old man, Joe Kennedy, was in with the mob up to his neck. There were a lot of deals cut over the years, a lot of money made over the years, and deals made over the years about if Kennedy becomes president, certain hands will be washed and so forth.
Sure.
Yet,
that's
then,
real
and in Michael Collins Piper's book, Final Judgment, he also shows the link to the Israelis like Meyer Lansky and so forth that actually ran even the well-known mobsters. But my question is that once the old man had a stroke, I believe it was, Bobby and Jack Kennedy pretty much tore up all those deals and started going after the mob, Jimmy Hoffa and so forth. This had to have not settled well with those people that thought they could just stroll into the Oval Office and get whatever they wanted. What
sure,
do you think?
Sure. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting anomaly, the Kennedys, because they didn't go along to get along. In the end, they were actually trying to do what was right, it appears. And you know what happens to, I mean, that's, look throughout human history in all high civilizations, the people who really shoot for the ideals and really shoot for the people, they don't fare well. It's the old cliche that nice guys finish last.
Well, we were talking about this the other day, about conscience and how people without conscience, psychopaths, essentially, hunt people of conscience throughout history who've tried to tell the truth. And do the
well,
right
you know,
thing.
I mean, when you get people who are ethical and moral, they're generally at a severe disadvantage with the barbarians.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
barbarians don't play by any rules. They go behind the nice guy's back and stab him, and that's that.
Yeah.
They consider themselves the wise guys and the rest of us fools.
Right. Well, they don't have to play by any rules.
Yeah. And before we move on, because there's some other stuff in the fifth disc that I want to touch upon, but it's been said that John F. Kennedy was the last American president who actually considered himself the president. In other words, he thought he could actually do things without any strings being pulled. Do you think that's an accurate statement?
It's a good question. I don't think so. I think that Robert Kennedy was a little freer in conscience than JFK. JFK was going along and get along to a certain degree because he was more experienced and more mature and more aware of practical politics.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't, you know, I mean, he was doing things. He was hedging his bets. He wanted to end the Cold War eventually. There's a fantastic new biography of him that utilizes a huge amount of previously unknown material from the British archives that nobody's ever touched before. I saw a fantastic talk by Barbara Leaning, the author, and I believe it's a biography of JFK entitled something to the effect of JFK, the life of a statesman. And it brings up a lot of this information about what he wanted to do versus what he had to do for the public. Remember when he was secretly pulling out of Vietnam, starting the motions, and he was going to finish that after his re-election in 64, he was publicly hedging his bets because the very forces that ended up killing him were threatening him, and he knew it.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Politically as well as physically.
You get into Sirhan, and that starts leading into this whole business of mind control, which I found so compelling. And I know that influencing brain functions and ultimately the thought processes and subsequent behavior of human beings became an increasingly important goal of our military, our intelligence agencies, even within the media and big corporations through advertising. Talk a little bit about psychic driving.
Well, it's only natural that they would want to do that because their primary motive in life is power. And if you can directly influence people, which, again, goes back even to the Roman Empire and probably before, where through propaganda you influence what people's reality view is, you can control them to a certain degree, or at least strongly influence them. And like Noam Chomsky writes about with manufacture of consent, you know, if you have a nation that is at least keeping the image of freedom, how are they going to keep the people from stopping you from doing what you want to do? Well, you control the information, control the media, and you can gradually turn them to the opinions that you want, so that you can do what you want to do and keep the secrets you want to keep, and they've been very successful at this, and they're successful to this day. Although, thanks to people like you, it seems that there are more and more cracks in their facade.
Yeah, exactly. And if anybody wants to read a good book, a chat book, Lisa last year wrote Hunters of Souls that touched upon a lot of this stuff. And two of the individuals that she names, and you also name in your DVDs, is Ewan Cameron from Canada, and also an individual named Sidney Gottlieb, who were into this MKUltra, working with the CIA and doing some atrocious experiments. Give everyone a little taste of what these guys were involved in.
You know, it's amazing the sort of synchronicities that can happen in life. When I was a child in the 1950s, in the early to middle 1950s, my own mother had a nervous breakdown, and she was treated in a Pasadena hospital where MK research was being done.
Wow.
She was also going to Bible study at the Richard Nixon home. We lived in Whittier, where the Nixons lived, and she was studying the Bible with Richard Nixon's sister.
Oh,
and
man.
My own mother had her own memory erased from that point on. I'm not sure what age she was at that point, probably late 20s, and her entire life up to that point was erased. It was told to her and the rest of us that this was treatment that was helpful to her. But she, like that woman whose name I can't recall in the video,
Linda McDonald.
Linda McDonald. She's a very similar face to McDonald. And I did not cognize this. I mean, I was a little child. And it wasn't until I began to learn about MKUltra, until I heard Linda McDonald tell her story, that all of a sudden it clicked at me, and I thought, holy cow.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That might have been what happened to my mother.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, this woman, Linda McDonald.
Mother's okay, thank God, except that she had, you know, certain damage to her done by these people, and it's possible it wasn't actually part of the MKUltra program. It had just been other doctors who were imitating them or experimenting on their own. Who knows, but they did something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are dozens of hospitals involved in this MKUltra research and experimentation, and they essentially ripped away a person's sense of identity by electroshock and all kinds of tortures, drugs, putting them in comas, weeks and weeks of sleep.
Yeah, my mom did tell me, I actually talked to her only this past year about it. She's 80 years old, and I didn't want to broach it at first because I was afraid it might upset her to bring back those horrific memories. But she did talk to me, but she had very, very little memory of it. And she said, the only thing I can remember is that they did give me sodium pentothal.
Huh.
Yeah, they rip away, they destroy a person's memory.
Yeah, they did.
Of their past life.
Although she said it gradually came back, a lot of it did gradually come back over the years. But then she didn't remain in treatment like some people who... probably, I mean, I don't think she was somebody that they were going to choose for, you know, some sort of secret act or something. I think she was just one of the, God knows, maybe it's thousands, who knows how many American citizens have been subjected to this just because they need grist for their psycho experimental mill.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Now, before we run out of time, we have to talk about Jim Jones in Guyana, and I've researched this quite a bit, but as I told you earlier today, there's stuff in your DVD that I wasn't even aware of, and specifically, Jim Jones did a lot of traveling before he became this famous minister to hot spots across the country, and with no visible support, staying in very swanky places and doing jobs. One place even ran a newspaper article saying that he was in the CIA.
Victor, I also was reading today to go along with this subject matter, and it looks very much, Terrence, like Jim Jones was working for the CIA.
For a long time.
It does appear to be that case. And I've had a lot of curiosity within myself about some of these other cults and how they might be manipulated, like that Swiss cult that committed a major suicide years ago. It was in the news, and then it was out, and you could find very little information about it. You've got to wonder if some of these others are not the part of this whole MK picture. There were a whole lot of MK-related programs going on. I want to say over 100, but I can't actually remember how many there were. But there were many, many, and we know nothing about them or where they were doing or what they were doing.
What's interesting, too, is that the MK Ultra program officially, supposedly ended the year before the people started settling in Guyana at Jonestown.
Yeah.
And then in your video, you know, it really makes one pose the question, was Jonestown really part of, like, a spin-off of MK Ultra as a mind control experiment?
Well, they just went underground, like there's so many other things they've been caught with. They just change the name, they make it, you know, a higher classified area. They limit the number of people involved, and they just go on with their work. They just do it in secret. You know, I mean, it's funny. They always deny everything until you prove it, and then they admit that, but they only admit that, and they deny it.
Exactly.
Right. Well, they even lied about the way that people actually died.
Yeah, because in my
book... Yeah. They were murdered, and who knows who all the details, but the fascinating thing that I think is just one of the smoking guns is the number of drugs they had there, the hospital they had there.
Absolutely.
Chlorazine, examined. Everybody at Jonestown was examined every day. Now, what in the world did they...
That's what you do when you're studying a control group, as you pointed out so eloquently in your video.
And in my book, The New World Order Exposed, I show this and quote John Judge, who you used in your DVD, or quote in there, is the popular myth is that all of these people, 900 plus, simply drank Kool-Aid and died, when in actuality, a lot of them had puncture wounds from syringes, and also they were shot.
Well, it's also very, very interesting how it is possible, by selectively just divulging certain amounts of information, mislead the public into believing that, because they had tape recordings going on, and if you just listen to the tapes, it sounds like they're screaming and yelling, but it's, you know, they were being murdered at the time, but they can convince people by showing, playing these tapes, that they were actually committing suicide.
You know, Victor and I were talking after your video was done last night, and we were likening this whole mind control experimentation that's gone on over the years, how it's evolved, to even what's going on in the alternative media now, where people are being corralled and contained in different pens, and their thought processes are being shaped and remolded by certain guru-type figures.
Remember that in the 1970s, Congress made it public that there were over 300 media assets from the CIA working within the American media. Well, you know they've got to be putting people into the alternative media to keep people astray.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and some people think that,
another mind control experiment.
Yeah, I mean, that since the mainstream media is controlled, they think, well, they couldn't control certain figures in the alternative media, but it's obvious that would be even more so of a motivation for them to do so. But one last thing on Jonestown that a lot of people aren't aware of either is that they had British Green Beret or British elite forces there. They
and
also
American
had
too.
American forces there. And then they had this freak-out scene at the airstrip where they had Richard Dwyer. They had, who was the congressman? Leo Ryan. And so forth. Describe a little bit. It must have been mayhem those last few hours.
I haven't read actually any books on it. I've only collected video documentary footage. I've read a few articles. I've read a little John Judge on it, but he's the only source I have on that information.
You know what you can do, Terrence?
There are more out there that I just am not aware. You probably know more about that than I do.
Google Jonestown and then CIA mind control experiment. There is stuff on there.
Yeah, tons of it. But it really brought it to life through your DVD because I've read it, but to see what happened to this airstrip where this, what was it, a bus or some kind of a panel truck or something pulls up to the airstrip, and all of a sudden this guy, Richard Dwyer, who's working with the CIA, he kind of just drifts off to the side.
And if you notice in the documentary footage, he's carrying a big box with, with another guy, and that was probably like that other crate that they were pulling out all their documents and shutting down the whole operation. That's why everybody had to be killed.
And that was the first congressman.
Well, Ryan exposed it or was about to expose it, and they had to shut it down.
Yeah.
He was the first congressman killed in the line of duty. from what I've read about it.
Yeah.
Are you guys aware that there was a terrorist attack in 1954 in the halls of Congress where there were three terrorists who fired weapons down from the gallery on the congressman?
Really?
Uh-uh. I wasn't.
That's right. I've got an old newsreel that shows it, and most people aren't aware of it, but it was, you know, that was an actual terrorist attack right in. In fact, you saw many terrorist attacks in this country. Judges' houses were bombed and blown up. The President of the United States, Harry Truman, was attacked by a group of terrorists and came nearly to be killed. And yet people are not aware of this, and I think that it's very interesting that these things happen. And there were six congressmen wounded in the halls of Congress by these terrorists. People don't know about it because they didn't clamp down on our freedoms and our constitutional rights after that.
I can't let this end without bringing up the footage that you show of the media hobnobbing with the politicians at these little cocktail party fiestas, and how you point out it's kind of hard to tell who's the media and who's the politician.
With all this great big elite class now, corporate people and politicians and media people, they're all in the same class.
All in the same group.
They all hobnob together, and not with us.
How objective can they be?
Have more to do with what they want than what we want.
You're exactly right. And I want to, first of all, thank you, Terrence, for coming on the show today. This disc, I can't thank you enough. These five discs.
Do you know what he said after it was over? He just said, Jesus God Almighty.
It was just, after watching all five discs, it's such a mind blower.
We just sat there. We didn't know what to do, what to say, you know.
Even when I went to bed, my head was like spinning from just... The mind warp to realize, as Lisa says, like, how can we ever beat these monsters? I mean, it's just so intense of what they're doing.
Isn't it incredible how much footage is in there that the American people are not allowed to see?
You're exactly right.
And I can't thank you for
gathering this.
I don't have the copyright rights to it, so it's still going to be held by CBS. And a lot of that stuff comes from the CBS archive that I purchased over the Internet. It's available out there.
Yeah.
Really?
Collectors are selling it, yeah. But it's never been released, and it certainly is never shown on the networks.
Well, we can't thank you enough.
Absolutely.
The DVDs were great. The interview, very interesting. And I want to close, Terrence, with a quote from the last disc of your DVD set. It says, if you don't take responsibility for what goes into your mind, somebody else will.
He also said the population is considered the enemy.
Right. Very, 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 very...
That was Chomsky on a Bill Moyers interview.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to have Mr. David Bay. He's going to talk about America's mysterious beginnings of New Atlantis. Once again, want to thank Mr. Terrence Raymond for being on today. And remember, folks, keep your eyes open.
And think for yourselves.
Because there is a whole hell of a lot going on. We'll be back on Wing TV tomorrow.
See you then.